Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Welcome, everybody, to Lights, Camera, Podcast, episode 22, February. First episode of February. We're into the second month of the year, so the movies slowly get better from here on out.
Thank God. Yeah. Thank God. God.
It's been a rough month. Rough month.
It's bad, dude. It's been a great month for movie news, but the movies themselves have not been great.
We will be reviewing two of them. One, Maze Runner, The Death Cure, and then The Cloverfield Paradox, which literally came out Sunday night on Netflix. I think if you were watching the Super Bowl, you know about that. We'll talk about those movies. Want to note off the top very quickly that we have a giveaway going right now, and it involves our brand new Instagram page, @LightsCameraPod on Instagram. If we hit 5,000 followers, we're going to be giving away free merchandise, a Goss God crew neck, an exclusive Jeff Goldblum crew neck that we're no longer selling, 2 Lights Camera Pod stickers, and a Black Panther Funko Pop. So go follow us on Instagram @LightsCameraPod for some big time movie boy content. We're also going to answer some listener questions. Got a lot of questions, some pretty funny ones, and then some serious ones too. So we'll answer those. Also, please, biggest thing, vote for the Goskers, our movie award show. We will be doing that the first week of March, right before the Oscars. Adnan Virk of ESPN will be on to break down the Oscars. And then we will have our award show, the Goskers.
It's Gosker, like Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You just got that?
No, I'm just fucking with you guys.
You can go vote for the Goskers by clicking in the description. There's a link in the description, very clearly labeled, or bit.ly/2018Goskers. Give you a little short link there if you don't want to click.
Rolls up the tongue. That link really rolls up the tongue.
It really does. So please go vote. Follow us @LightsCameraPod for all that. The big news from the week in movies is obviously the Super Bowl trailers. They released a lot of them. Solo, Jurassic World, Mission Impossible, Avengers, Skyscraper, A Quiet Place. Let's start it out with the big one because it got more than just a Super Bowl trailer. It also had a trailer the next day on Good Morning America, and that's the Solo, A Star Wars Story trailer. Immediate thoughts, guys. After seeing it, after hearing Han Solo speak for the first time, butter or no butter?
I'm going to butter it. It's a Star Wars movie, Jeff, but I'm really worried about the movie. The trailer was good. I liked the vibe of the trailer. The settings were cool. Donald Glover looked like a badass as Lando. His coat he was wearing might be up there with the Gosgod's coats in terms of coolness factor. So he looked great. They're going for a Western heisty type of feel, and it captured that well. But then you get back to Han Solo speaking, and I think the real big worry point for me is the acting in this movie. And from what I've been hearing, the acting is the weakest part, which is bad because it's a movie and you need actors in the movie. So I'm buttering just based off the fact that it's a Star Wars movie, but I am worried about this movie as well.
I'm buttering too. I agree with Trill. Donald Glover looking like a whole ass meal. Alden doesn't really look or sound like Han Solo, but I think that the actual thing with Han Solo is going to be capturing his presence which I think is going to be more difficult than anything. And if he can get the presence right, like the swagger, then I think that can that'll sort of override not being able to get the voice or the look entirely right. The one question I had coming out of this, is Emilia Clarke even really a good actress?
I have heard that there are issues with most everyone in this movie, especially the main ones, and I believe Emilia Clarke is lumped into that. I don't know. I don't particularly care for most of the movies she's been in, and I know a lot of diehard like Game of Thrones book fans don't even like her portrayal in Game of Thrones, so I think the jury's out there on how good of an actress she is.
You can divide Emilia Clarke into two categories. When she's doing romantic lead type of stuff, I think she's great, which is why I really liked her in the last season of Game of Thrones, because it had more of that Jon Snow, Daenerys subplot. And then she was in that movie that she was the live-in nurse to that one fellow who wanted to kill himself.
Me Before You?
Yeah, Me Before You. And I thought she was great in Me Before You. I mean, it was a tearjerker type of movie. Maybe not everyone's cup of tea. But I think when she has to be like a Daenerys in all the other seasons of Game of Thrones, or her character in Terminator Genesis, it is not that great. So I don't really know. I'm torn because I like her in some things and other things. Like, she was really bad in Terminator Genesis, but Me Before You, I really liked her. In the last season of Game of Thrones, I really liked her. But going back to Jeff's point, I wasn't really sold on Han Solo even in this trailer. It just doesn't look like Han Solo. It doesn't feel like Han Solo. And that's the problem with a character like Han Solo. It is so tied to Harrison Ford. It is so linked to one specific actor that even if it's a younger actor, it's going to be so hard to get that right.
It's a really tough thing to do, and it's a tough thing for fans or anybody to try to throw out the window. And somebody who I respect his movie opinion a lot, a friend, Christian Harloff from Collider Video, and he also is one of the people who founded and created the Schmodown, the movie trivia thing on YouTube. Check that out. Very good. Hopefully we'll have him on one day. He said, you know, you have to throw it out. You have to throw the Han Solo thing out the window here and the Harrison Ford comparison, or you're just not going to like it no matter what. Like, in order to give it a chance, you have to throw that out the window. It's just not going to happen. Like, no matter who the actor was, you were not going to get another Harrison Ford as Han Solo. So it's a good point. He's like, now, if you like the movie beyond that, that's up to you. But if you want to have an open mind about this movie, you can't go into it expecting that or thinking that'll happen. And that's a good thing I had to remind myself. I will say, am I buttering for it being a Star Wars movie? Yes, of course. But I'm not worried like you are, Trill, because it's hard to be worried about something you know isn't going to be good. And I don't think it's going to be good at all. There is no way I think this is going to end up being a good movie. And that's not the fault of Ron Howard. I think it's the fault of it being a complete mess from the start. It took on a challenge I don't think they should have taken on. I don't think you mess with Han Solo. You know, I think it was a mistake from the start. And if it's great, I'm going to eat crow and be very happy. But if it's not great, I'm not going to be that bummed out, because I just think there's too many things here that combine to make a situation where they had to nail it 100% for it to be good. And I just look, I'm holding a hope, but I don't have confidence in it at all.
I kind of get what you're saying. What your friend told you about is nailing Han's role. But do we not give that same leeway towards Lando? Because I don't think anyone isn't excited for Danny Glover as Lando. I think that's nobody is saying, oh, that's a bad casting. Oh, he won't get the swagger. Oh,
Danny Glover. Oh, Danny Glover's playing Lando. That's wild, man. He's like 75 years old Lando. He's like Benjamin Button. He ages in reverse.
Is anyone upset, though, about Donald Glover as Lando? I don't think anybody's upset about it.
No, which is funny, because he could be terrible, too, for all we know. He could end up being the worst part of the movie, which is pretty funny. But I think people know him more than they know Alden Ehrenreich. So
I trust Donald Glover. That's the thing. Is everything Donald Glover's been in and everything he does has been really, really good to absolutely phenomenal. So I trust his ability to go into that role and do a good job. What I don't trust is a movie that fired its directors, hired on a new director, didn't release a trailer until 8 weeks before the movie's supposed to be released. Maybe that's an understatement. That's what makes me nervous. And Han Solo is just the thing that scares me about this is people are so mad about The Last Jedi ruining Star Wars that if this drops and is bad, the reaction to this is going to be so awful. And that may be what I'm least looking forward to, because I do not want to fight online about Star Wars for another fucking year. I'm just done. I'm done. I'm done with it.
Yeah, and then the last thing I'll say is that there is a year and a half gap between this one and the next one, just about, because episode 9 comes out again in December of 2019. So there is a year and a half gap between the next ones if this one is bad and people, you know, fight about it. But I think this one will be a much more definitive good or bad, where the last one, there's many reasons why people dislike it, and there's many reasons why people like it. I will say, I do need to hear more from Alden Ehrenreich before I make a decision. But it's a much different sounding Han, obviously. So we'll see. It looked nice. The trailer looked nice visually. But you know what? Give me more. It was still a teaser trailer. It wasn't a full trailer. So next movie that had a trailer. Actually, this was the first trailer during the Super Bowl out of the ones we're going to talk to. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom had another trailer. And this one was much different than the first trailer.
It looked good for a Jurassic World movie. What I'm going to do is I'm going to mentally separate Jurassic World from Jurassic Park here, because that's my mistake. Like I said, I really liked the first one coming out of it. And then when I rewatched it, that was when I was like, this wasn't as great as I thought it was. But we're going to see it. We're going to review it. Might as well go into it having expectations for what it's going to be. I mean, probably pretty predictable, but I didn't mind it. I liked it better than the first trailer. I didn't really catch up with like the fan reactions or much of what other people thought, but I thought it was good.
There's one thing I noticed, and that's the line that they say where they ask somebody, what is that? And a little girl says, they made it. That makes me think, are they kind of going back to the line from the idea from the last one where they're hybriding dinosaurs, or is NGen going to try and like make military dinosaurs like the bad guy from Jurassic World is trying to do? Which that would be kind of cool if they got loose in the mainland. And speaking of the mainland scenes, one thing I'm sure me and Trill both noticed is our plump little handsome man, Toby Jones, giving a speech at one point, all buttered up for Toby Jones in a big budget movie. Get that man his money. The one thing that I wish we could see out of a Jurassic Park franchise, which it's too late for this iteration of it, but to have like a really R-rated one, like a really like just, I don't know, not I don't want to say Logan-esque, but just like a take a turn away from like the PG-13-ish stuff and get it in like a really R-rated Jurassic Park movie. I think that would be really cool.
What would you get out of that you wouldn't get out of a normal Jurassic World movie? Like somebody, instead of saying there's some dinosaurs, they'd say there's some fucking dinosaurs. Fucking
dinosaurs. I just mean like
the T-Rex swears.
Yeah, the T-Rex is just smoking a cigar. It's like, I've been on this goddamn island too long. You don't know what I've seen.
I just want to see some gore, man. Give me some gore in Jurassic Park. It's fucking dinos, and like it's all off screen.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you got with Wolverine, is everyone thought, oh, it's rated R. It's just going to be him saying the word fuck, you know, it's going to be language more. But it ended up being the fact that you just saw all the gore and all the kills. So I guess you could see that with Jurassic World. So, you know what? It's coming out this year. It's going to be another big hit. It's going to make a lot of money. We'll review it. We'll talk about it. But it's Chris Pratt, and it looks like it's got a little different tone than what I expected from the first trailer, so I'm into it. Mission Impossible Fallout had its first trailer during the Super Bowl, but somebody said online that I read, think about how many struggles Bond has. You know, like they come out with two good ones with Daniel Craig, then, Bond's in trouble, bad Bond movie. You know, the Bourne series has completely run its course, all these spy thrillers, but who would have thought that Mission Impossible would be the one to outlast them all in terms of like still going on right now in 2018, because Bond is still there, but Bond has issues. Every month there's a new story about Bond. Or Mission Impossible, with the exception of Tom Cruise almost impaling himself on the side of a building. I mean, it's going great.
Trailer was awesome. This was the trailer I thought was the best one. It's kind of like the Fast and the Furious, right? Like they evolved into what they are now, and it's way different. Like the first Mission Impossible movies, you have that comedic view of Tom Cruise hanging down by all those wires, and now it's just Tom Cruise jumping out of helicopters and impaling himself on buildings. This one looks awesome, and I really like Henry Cavill playing a villain that it doesn't seem like a traditional villain. He just is like a normal guy who's bad. Maybe we'll see more of that in the movie. It probably won't even be what happens, but that one fist fight scene they had was so brutal in the trailer. It looked awesome. You could almost feel like you're being punched by Henry Cavill. Is sick.
Dude, Henry Cavill fighting terrorists in the streets of Paris, sign me all the way the fuck up. And that bathroom scene, like you were saying, the fist fight where he rolls up his sleeves and they just start going at each other. You know, I'd love to get two hands on Henry Cavill in the bathroom too. I'm all aboard with that fight scene. It was great.
Hell
probably
yeah.
The best one out of all the trailers so far. The one thing that seems sort of weird is they had the bad guy from the last one, Solomon Lane, returning. which is sort of lame. I thought he was like an okay bad guy, but there's like a lot of room for other actors, I think, to step in as a villain in a franchise that's doing as on the uprise as that.
So Henry Cavill's not the bad guy in this one?
I think he's CIA in this movie.
Oh, I thought he was like a corrupt CIA dude. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Well, I mean, it'll probably be a spin, I think.
The mustache probably made me think he was going to be the bad guy.
Well, per usual, it seems as though Ethan Hunt will run into some sort of issues, you know, as always, and we'll get crossed up somehow. And so I feel like, you know, you probably get that with Henry Cavill. But I thought he was going to be some sort of villain, too. But maybe he'll be, you know, an antagonist some way like that. But I agree with both of you. Hardcore butter. I'm very excited for this movie. I still can't believe how great these have been, like these new ones. They've just been so fun. They've been great action, great storylines, engaging, fun start to finish. So I hope Mission Impossible Fallout is like the last two. Next up, two more to go. Skyscraper with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It is an intense trailer. His family is trapped in a skyscraper, like taken hostage, and he gets pinned with, I think, the building being set on fire. I forget the exact premise of it, but it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson jumping from one skyscraper essentially to another, and one's on fire, and it's insane. He also has a prosthetic leg too. He's an amputee, but I'm gonna butter. It's The Rock. Come on.
The only thing I can say about this is people went in and analyzed the movie poster of The Rock jumping, and they calculated that his trajectory of jump would not clear to the next skyscraper. So I'm hoping this is something that gets corrected in the next movie poster.
Did anyone? I think a couple of people posted. It kind of just looks like Die Hard, right?
Well, I mean, if you're at the top of a sky, I mean, kind of
terrorists, skyscraper. It's like,
yeah, but maybe I don't know. The thing about Die Hard, it's so tied into Bruce Willis and his character in that movie, and I think The Rock's going to be not playing a John McClane type character, so it's hard to remove that. But yeah, if you consider a skyscraper and terrorists to be Die Hard esque. Then yes, it looks like Die Hard.
Oh, wow. Trill, breaking Colts news.
What?
Josh McDaniels not taking the job.
Oh, let's leave this in the podcast because I want people to know how far my Colts fandom has fallen in the last 10 years. I just cannot deal with this organization anymore. It infuriates me. And I know Jeff's a Browns fan, so he's probably like, well, shit. I would have taken the Super Bowl victory in ineptitude, but the way they mismanaged Andrew Luck's career. Oh my God, dude. What? That's wild, dude. Crazy.
So Skyscraper, kind of a mix between Die Hard, I guess, Ken and Jack, and maybe Towering Inferno. I could see those comparisons, but I'm excited for it. Whatever. It's going to be a fun Rock movie. You know, I do want to see him really expand his acting chops. I will say that. You know, I would like to see him in a very serious role because I do think he has what it takes, and I'd love to see him in a role that might get him nominated for an Oscar or something, so we'll see. But I like most of what The Rock does at this point, and he does a lot, so that's saying a lot. Lastly, last trailer from the Super Bowl, actually not really, because we're not going to talk about the Cloverfield trailer because we're going to just talk about the movie. But the last one we'll talk about is A Quiet Place, and this one is mostly for Ken Jack because he's the anti-horror movie guy. Quiet Place, John Krasinski, Emily Blunt. The idea is that they have to be very silent because when they make noise, a monster is attracted to them. And the trailer expands a little more on like what happens, like the world kind of falls apart is what it seems like. It's kind of post-apocalyptic. Thoughts on A Quiet Place? Are you excited to see A Quiet Place, Ken Jack?
You know, I think I've mentioned it on this podcast like a million times. The one thing I really enjoy when horror movies use effectively is when they use sound, like in, what was it, Don't Breathe, and movies like that. Whenever a movie can make good use of that, I think that I will always enjoy it. And I like Krasinski as an actor. I like Emily Blunt a lot. So I don't know. It's a recipe for success for me. So I'm interested and I'm definitely excited to watch it.
Yeah, I've said that many times too, is that sound and silence and darkness without jump scares. Now this movie will have jump scares, for the trailer had jump scares. That is 10 times more scarier than just having a clown pop out or a monster pop out, you know, build it up. The tension terrifies me much more than the scares most of the time, you know, even if they make me jump. So I'm on board with that. What about you, Troy? You excited for A Quiet Place?
Yeah, sorry. I was just digesting the big Josh McDaniels.
No, no worries.
look, I think this movie looks great. They don't give you everything in this trailer, which is what you want out of a trailer, that you get the idea of the movie and you get the tension and you hope it's going to be a good movie, but I want to know more about, you know, this general world. And I just got done playing The Last of Us a couple weeks ago before I got hooked on Fortnite with you guys, which, by the way, shout out to Fortnite. And I'm really into that post-apocalyptic infected zombies, people coming after you type thing. So I'm down with this. It looks great.
Speaking of having trouble digesting, did you guys hear that they're making a Get Out 2?
Is there a follow-up to this, Ken Jack?
No, it's just a bad joke.
It's a bad poop joke.
Oh, shit. Dude, I have lost my fastball. I am like every Robbie runs the John Cena one by me. I literally did not get that until you explained it to me.
There's a question. Ahead. I'll give you time to think it over. A listener submitted this question, which I put on the sheet to ask tonight. Trill, how did you gain so many followers? And would you like to dispel the rumors you've lost a step?
I definitely have lost a step. We'll get into that.
Oh, yeah, we'll save it. Okay, so that's Super Bowl trailers. Ken Jack, your poop joke with the seamless transition into Get Out. Apparently, Jordan Peele is strongly considering a Get Out sequel. How would you want a Get Out sequel, I guess, is my main question.
Yeah, I would like it, honestly, to be more of an anthology type series, to just have a different concept with the same type of vibe. I don't know. Look, anything Jordan Peele wants to do, I have complete trust in him to make a great movie. So if he decided to continue that storyline, I'm fully buttering for that one. But it would be cool to have the same actors back just playing different roles.
I'd be into it. I'm just afraid of where they might be able to take it, which is sort of rough. Because I feel like in the grand spectrum of horror, Get Out is kind of going to be looked at in the long run of history sort of as a classic. And I feel like it might get lessened a little bit more, sort of like almost Halloween or something, when they just make a billion sequels to it that all suck ass. So unless they have a really inventive way to make it different than the first one, I don't know how much I'm into it. It might be better, like you're saying, as an anthology, maybe a series.
I'm just thinking, as long as it's Jordan Peele's and he has complete creative control over it, I have no worries with what the way they'd want to handle it. If they decide to hand it off to like Joel Schumacher, then I'd start to worry. I don't think that would ever happen.
I will say there was another article that came out last week, and it was about the Emoji Movie and Jordan Peele, and that he was offered to play the poop emoji. And I'll read his quote. This is on slashfilm.com. Peele went on to say that he found the offer, quote unquote, fucked up, but then said he'd sleep on it. Peele also asked how much money he would be paid for the role. His manager then told him they've already given it to Sir Patrick Stewart. And then Peele said, I was like, fuck this. And that's when Peele said he quit acting and, you know, so on and so forth. He's nominated for an Academy Award. So it's kind of funny how that worked.
It just goes to show you how little planning some of that Emoji Movie stuff didn't have. Because the entire joke I thought behind that poop emoji was that Sir Patrick Stewart was the voice. So they didn't even have like him in mind when they created the character. They're just like, oh, crap. Like, thankfully, we backed ourselves into something that's kind of funny. So if I'm Jordan Peele, I don't blame him. You got to ask how much you're making off that.
During his acceptance speech, the DGA Awards, he said, the Emoji Movie actually helped me quit acting. I was offered the role of poop. I love that. Like, how many acceptance speeches can you say that? I was offered the role to play poop, and that's what drove me to now hold this award. I mean, I don't know if it drove it directly with Get Out, but regardless, he focused on, you know, the more serious part of this, like Get Out and directing and creating movies as opposed to acting. And hey, good for him. Yeah. So Jordan Peele, Get Out 2, tweet us. Let us know what you would want out of a Get Out 2. I do like the anthology thing, and I like that, thinking about it more and more as we look at this Cloverfield universe we'll get into, which I'm not sure the path they're going down, and you know, some people are starting to question that and why they didn't go to anthology movies. Lastly, big Star Wars news. Won't hang on this too long, but the creators of the Game of Thrones TV series, so not George R. R. Martin, the two creators of the series will make a Star Wars movie series. So separate from the current Skywalker saga and separate from the Rian Johnson upcoming trilogy or however many movies he's making, they will be making their own series of movies. Lots of speculation. It could be an older movie where, you know, Rian Johnson may not be doing the older movies. He may be doing just a different set of characters in the same universe or same time period. Whereas, you know, these guys, they may be doing the Old Republic or something around then. So two things came out of this that a lot of people have been talking about. One, a lot of people have criticized Game of Thrones since they've been off book, saying that this doesn't instill a lot of confidence You know, we haven't loved a lot of what they've done off book, even though the action's been great. The writing has gone downhill. Also, oversaturation of Star Wars. I'll get into my opinion, but Trey, I'll let you kick it off. If the Game of Thrones things concern you, and of course, the oversaturation. And I will say, there's been no indication if they will go off the one movie a year thing. Game of Thrones doesn't wrap till 2019, so that's still a little ways away. Then they got to develop everything. So the one movie a year thing still may be the case.
So I'm checking Wikipedia, and I hope I don't butcher their names because I know their names from being on the Game of Thrones Reddit all the time during Game of Thrones season. Benioff and Weiss, I'll just call them B and W from here on out. Weiss doesn't have much in terms of the filmography, but B does. He was a writer on 25th Hour, which was a pretty good movie. Then Troy, Stay, some other ones. He was a writer on The Kite Runner, and then he was a writer on X-Men Origins Wolverine, and then Brothers. And then, of course, they have Game of Thrones to their TV credits. I haven't really looked at their full TV credits. So I pretty much just know them. I like 25th Hour, and I like Game of Thrones, but I wouldn't go as far to say Game of Thrones is great. And that might upset some people, but I do think there are problems with the way the show is written. I think they've worked themselves into a jam with the last season and having so much to cover. And I think the pacing of the show is really off. Love the show. Part of that is the difficulty of working with the source material. As you know, the writer of Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire refuses to write the next book. So they had to make it up as they go. So I understand that. I don't think I know enough about them. And that was a long-winded way of saying this. I don't think I know enough about them to conclude whether or not it's going to be good or bad. Certainly, I'm excited to get more Star Wars, but I do think you have a good point. We're going to be reaching a Star Wars saturation point. And I think that won't faze me, just being the huge nerd boy, soft nerd boy that I am. I'm not bothered by that, but I can see people, we'll call them normies, who might say, this is just too much goddamn Star Wars. And maybe that's an issue they'll run into, and maybe it's not. If they're all good, then no, like just another good movie.
Ken Jack, before you get into it, I will say this quickly. If I'm going to be worried about anything with these guys, it's the fact that one of them wrote X-Men Origins Wolverine. So that's far more concerning.
Part of the problem is that I read all the Game of Thrones books, and they're really interesting, but that's such a wealth of source material for those guys to be working off of. And the fact that the kind of the screenwriting has had as many issues as it's had, with the amount that they've been able to condense, like it I don't know, it doesn't instill confidence in me. It's like Trill was saying. So
I would argue though that Star Wars is similar in that there is a wealth of source material, even though most of it has been evaporated with removing the expanded universe. So maybe they would be at home there, but I get your general point.
That was my next idea with it, was depending, maybe if they took it off of a book series or something, and that's what they did it off of, that might be interesting. I think it would really depend on what book series it is, though, because it would have to be something really different than what we've had so far. So if they're working off of something existing, I'd be a little bit more, I don't know, spellbound by it. But if it's all going to be completely original content, I would really hope that they have some other people on their team besides them just screenwriting.
Yeah, and so much of what they've done on Game of Thrones is, like you were saying, they've taken these 900-page books from George R.R. Martin and put them on TV. And a lot of the Game of Thrones fandom is the TV show's like an entryway for the books almost. People get into it and they get really deep into the lore. And there are a lot of people who watch it and are fine with just the TV series. But the problem with Star Wars fans is they feel like the people who are going to be really into these movies are the ones who are like the lore nerds. And I know a big issue that a lot of the book people have had is the way they've handled the lore in some instances with Game of Thrones and translated over into TV. A lot of it's been good, but I know there's like a lot like Lady Stoneheart that people haven't been happy with.
I am not sure the oversaturation thing plays up as long as they're doing one a year. I don't think that's oversaturation. People say, oh, it's like, it's going to be like Marvel. It's going to be like Marvel. Marvel releases three movies a year, which personally I love them. So it's not oversaturation to me. But I do understand the point people make. It's like, well, there's one every few minutes. Like right now, there's two Marvel trailers out. Actually, excuse me, three trailers for Marvel movies out right now that all come out in the next 5 months. Yes, that's crazy. Regardless, though, they're still good. Most people like all of them. So for me, one Star Wars movie a year, that's not oversaturation to me. But also, like, I get people saying they want it to be special. You know, they want each one to mean something. You know, like, if that's your problem, sure, whatever. But my other thing is there's people who hate them and don't care about them and are still like, too much. Why? Just don't fucking watch it. Like, if you really don't like it, then just don't fucking watch it. That's the thing. Like, we bitch and moan about Avatar all the time. We're going to see it because we got a podcast. But the truth of the matter is, no matter what I want to complain about Avatar sequels, if I really don't want to watch it, don't watch it. And as of now, they're still going to do one a year. And one a year out of 200 movies, one being Star Wars, that's fine with me. Look, if you're worried it's not going to be special anymore, then I guess maybe that's fair. Maybe you want a five-year gap between movies, or you want 10 years and they start it up all over again. But if you just hate them, just ignore them. That's all I got to say about that side.
Do you think it's going to be one a year, though? Because you have Rian Johnson with three movies, and you got these guys with three movies, and you got one other mainline movie, and then you have a solo movie, and then you have a Kenobi movie. So now we're looking at like 10 years. I mean, you're going to get these guys working on these things over the next 10 years, staggered on and off. That's like a huge commitment. So I almost feel like you're going to start seeing two Star Wars movies a year. Maybe they said they're not going to do that, and I'm just an idiot talking about it.
Yeah, like I said, we'll see. 2019 is when these guys are going to start getting going on it, I think, and start developing it. And by the time they get things going, you know, you could be one or two already into the Rian Johnson movies. So, you know, it's hard to tell on that timing. We'll have to wait for them to say, because now it's just speculation. But I think until we hear that, saying they're like Marvel movies with three a year, it's like, all right, hold on a second. Like, let it develop first, and then we'll actually see. So that's news. Movie reviews, Cloverfield, Maze Runner. We will talk about both of those movies when we come back on Lights, Camera, Podcast.
From the NBC studios in Burbank, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, featuring Kevin Eubanks and The Tonight Show Band. And me, I'm Ed Hall. And now,
Everybody, the Super Bowl was this past Sunday. Big time Super Bowl here on NBC. The Philadelphia Eagles won their first title by knocking off the New England Patriots. Big game, big game. During the game, though, they debuted the trailer for the Han Solo movie, the new Star Wars movie. The act in the movie playing Han Solo, Alden Ehrenreich, got a lot of heat for his impersonation of Han Solo. Luckily for him, Matt Patricia's impersonation of a good defensive coordinator for the Patriots was far worse. Boy, they gave up a lot of points, Kevin. Speaking of the Super Bowl, folks, did you see this? Josh McDaniels, big news from him. The Patriots offensive coordinator, he lost the Super Bowl, took a job with the Colts, and then backed out. He's in, he's out, he's in, he's out. What is he, directing a Gambit movie or something? What about this one, guys? You seen this one? You guys hear about this one? We got a new Mission Impossible trailer during the Super Bowl as well. Did you hear about this one, Kevin? Henry Cavill couldn't shave his mustache for the role. And Tom Cruise, apparently, I heard this, couldn't shave his fake ass either. That thing is so big. They also released a trailer for the movie A Quiet Place during the big game. I actually didn't know much about this movie. I didn't know it even existed. I had always assumed The Quiet Place was just what you call the movie theater after a joke in an Adam Sandler movie. Here we go. Maze Runner, Cloverfield. Every time I see the word Maze Runner, I want to say Maze Runner 2049. We'll review Maze Runner first, then we're going to review Cloverfield next. Maze Runner, The Death Cure, starring Dylan O'Brien. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes long. It's the third movie in a trilogy. Same guy who directed the first one and the second one directed the third one, Wes Ball. It's pretty rare. So good for him on that. I like that. It's cool. This movie was supposed to come out, I believe, either last year or 2017. 2017, actually. And Dylan O'Brien got into an accident on set that was very bad, like severe injuries, nearly life-threatening. It was very ugly, and credit to him for coming back and shooting the movie, and the action in the movie is pretty cool. I'll give it that. What we think about it, we'll get to in a second. Maze Runner, The Death Cure. Guys, what did you rate the movie?
I gave it a 60, and that might seem kind of high because I didn't particularly enjoy it, but let me tell you this little anecdote. Jeff, were you, I think it was you and I, because Ken Jack was in Philadelphia this weekend. We were playing Fortnite this weekend, as we tend to do, having a delightful little game. And we were talking over the team chat that Jeff had just gone to see Maze Runner. And the 14 or 15 year old that was on our team said he really, really liked this movie. I don't think I'm the target audience for this. This is another one of those branches of the YA novels adapted into movie trends that started with The Hunger Games, spun out to Maze Runner and Divergent, and probably some other ones I'm forgetting. It's not a particularly good movie or an interesting movie. It's hard to really differentiate between the characters a lot of times, like Dylan O'Brien and the other guy. Like, I don't really know. I saw the first one and remember liking that, but you get into like three deep of like one of these YA trilogies, and if you didn't see the second, you have no idea what's going on. So it's unfair for me to give this movie a really bad rating, because I think it probably hit its marks with the target audience. But if you don't like Maze Runner, or you like the first one and you haven't seen the Scorch Trials or whatever the name is, you're not going to enjoy this movie, because I didn't enjoy this movie because I didn't know what was happening. And that's not on the people who made the movie. It's also just not very interesting.
I gave it a flat 50, but I should also probably give it like a warning that I haven't seen the other two Maze Runners or read the books. I'm assuming there's books behind this. Yep. So I was missing a whole lot of context to these movies.
So you gave it a 50. Troll gave it a 60. I gave it a 60 as well. Troll, a flat 60. I liked it 1 point more than the original, the Maze Runner. And I liked it 11 points more. I gave it a 49 for the second one, the Scorch Trials, or Scorched. I think it was Scorch.
It was a Scorch Trials. No, it was a Scorch Trials, because I remember thinking to myself when I was reading the Wikipedia article, trying to fill in the gaps, like what the fuck was going on. I was like, that's a stupid name. Scorch Trials. What is this? Like, what are you trying out for? Like the regular Scorch? I don't want to see the trials. Just show me the Scorch itself.
We'll read the exact synopsis. In the epic finale of the Maze Runner saga, based on the books, young adult adaption, Thomas leads his group. Thomas is Dylan O'Brien. Thomas leads his group of escaped gladers on their final and most dangerous mission yet. To save their friends, they must break into the legendary Last City, a WCKD-controlled labyrinth that may turn out to be the deadliest maze of all. Anyone who makes it out alive will get answers to the questions the gladers have been asking since they first arrived in the maze. Problem with that, it says to save their friends. They're only trying to save one person. So friends, plural, is not right. Like, I thought it would be more about like the death cure itself. And I guess that's why their friend gets captured. But it's not. It's really just about getting the friend back. And even when the movie ends, I was like, well, they could have made a different movie. I will say this. This is my biggest thing. The action is cool. We got a lot of tweets about this movie saying they love the action. I thought the action was fine. It looked fine. Like, the action for what it was good. There were some good actors in this, too. Giancarlo Esposito, you'll recognize him probably most from Breaking Bad. Walton Goggins was in it, looking really ugly. Looking like the exact opposite of a snack. Like, just not looked looking like good.
Burnt popcorn.
yeah. Barry Pepper was in this. Obviously, Dylan O'Brien. Patricia Clarkson was in this. Aidan Gillen from Game of Thrones, you recognize him most from. So, it was boring. I think that was my thing. It was boring. It just felt like it was too long and boring. I think this movie suffers from the exact opposite that Cloverfield suffers from. There's too much time in this movie. If it was shorter and more condensed and there was more action across a shorter period of time, I may have enjoyed it more. There was a point actually in this movie. It was the 1 hour mark. Ken Jack had already poured his baked beans all over his popcorn. If you haven't seen the video, it's on our Twitter. We looked at each other at the same exact time. At about 1 hour in, like, kind of looking at each other like, all right, how much have we watched so far? You know, like, kind of, I don't know. This is like when I do like cardio, I'm on like a bike or I'm on like an elliptical or treadmill, and you look down thinking you've been on it for like 30 minutes. You've been on it for 10 minutes. I really thought we were an hour and a half, maybe hour and 45 minutes in. We were just about to cross the 1 hour mark. And that was tough. That was really hard. It was not easy to get through in terms of that. It was boring. I just thought it was very boring.
But again, I don't think we're the audience. That's what I go back to, is that I'm an old man now, and maybe I would have liked this as a teenager if I was in that young adult book type demographic. But even then, the movies I liked as a teenager had a bunch of action, cool stuff happening. This movie had some of that, but it didn't seem all that fun. It just seemed like a chore. Poor Dylan O'Brien got roped into this too. He signed a contract, then became a bigger star and had to finish out these movies. Kind of like what happened to Jennifer Lawrence.
It was in between an okay movie and a poop movie.
Hardest movies to review. These are the hardest movies to review because there's nothing substantial to say about it. At least with the horrible, shitty movie, you got a lot to say about it. They don't even give us that. It was fine. It was fine. It was like the dog sipping coffee in a burning house. Fine.
You're so right, though, in that they just sort of try to steal on that teen angst movie theme where it's like Twilight, Hunger Games, Divergent, Maze Runner. It's all the same bait, but they make money, so whatever. Good on them. I'm and all of us are not really part of their audience.
They all have the general theme of the adults are the bad guys, and they're trying to fit kids or younger kids into something that is unfair, and that the kids are not allowed to be themselves. And then through partnering up and learning to like each other and work together, they're able to beat the authorities, which is like super cool when your most hated person in the world is Mrs. Smith because she gave you homework on a fucking Friday night.
It's funny. I have said before, like, we should not say the words "I don't know" when we're on this podcast because it makes it sound like we don't know what we're talking about. But I legitimately just can say I don't know about this movie. I unmoved, unfazed. The best thing about this movie is that Ken Jack ate baked beans and popcorn before it started.
I think my favorite scene in the movie was when Will Poulter did the rock eyebrow when he took off his mask. That was my favorite thing. He has weird ass, like really thin eyebrows. He looks like Sid from Toy Story. He freaks me out. But he turned and he gave the rock eyebrow and I laughed out loud. It was amazing.
Let's go back. Did you guys like the Hunger Games movies? You didn't like I liked the first two. And then the last two, which I think were based off the third book. Didn't they do four total? They did a part one and part two.
They did.
I didn't like those. You could kind of tell Jennifer Lawrence didn't really want to be in it in the same way she didn't really want to be in the last X-Men movie she did. Maybe that's an unfair characterization on my part. Maybe I'm just assigning, you know, because she won an Oscar and whatnot. But
I gave Catching Fire, the second one, a 92 out of 100. I loved Catching Fire. Catching Fire was fantastic. It was great, and I liked it more than I liked the original because it had a different director. It wasn't all that shaky cam nonsense. There was a lot of shaky cam in the first one, but the first one was okay. The last two were a bummer. They were a bummer, and it was one book stretched over two movies, which you just can't do. We actually have a Hobbit question later on that we're going to answer, and my answer is going to be very similar to this one. You can't stretch out a book over two movies like that. You just can't, especially when it's that short. And you're right. The last book is the one people dislike the most.
That book stunk out loud. I had to read them all in high school. No, I didn't have to read them in high school. I did read them, though, in high school.
I get to read the fucking Hunger Games AP Lit. What kind of fucking high school do you go to?
I did, in fact, read the Hunger Games in high school. And I just remember disliking the last one so much. There was one pinnacle scene at the end of it where like your sister dies or something. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And just like put it down and never touch the Hunger Games again until the movies, which I didn't enjoy too much.
I know Ken Jack says he doesn't like them, but I was a big fan of Catching Fire. I loved Catching Fire. And PSH, rest in peace, Philip Seymour Hoffman was a big reason why. All right, Maze Runner, The Death Cure. We weren't big fans. Pretty boring. 50 from Ken Jack, 60 from myself, 60 from Trill.
Officially not buttered.
Officially not buttered. Nothing against Dylan O'Brien. I'm very glad that the next movie we're about to talk about came out because we almost had to only talk about Maze Runner this week, and that would have been very hard. Movie I'm referring to, obviously, as I've said before, is The Cloverfield Paradox. They released a trailer during the Super Bowl. There had been no marketing, nothing. There had been rumors about the movie. It was originally supposed to be called God Particle. It was coming out this year. It was actually going to be coming out last year. Then it got pushed back again, then pushed back another time. And then
I wonder why.
It was released. I wonder why they did that. I wonder why it's not in theaters. They dropped it with Netflix on Super Bowl Sunday night. A lot of people saw it. A lot of people were pumped. A lot of people did not like it. And it was a letdown. Trill Ballins, the third Cloverfield movie. What'd you give it?
I gave it a 55 out of 100. That's 5 points lower than The Maze Runner. And I have to say, I think I enjoyed The Maze Runner a little more. This movie had interesting parts. It didn't really know exactly what it wanted to be. It felt like every sci-fi movie that had come before it felt like Alien mixed with Event Horizon, mixed with a bunch of other things. A bunch of people on a spaceship, things happen. Worms are in somebody's body. The worms get expelled. I thought the first Cloverfield for the time it was released was good.
I went back and watched it in the last 5 years, and I didn't like it all that much because honestly, I had to take Dramamine before I saw it. Hey, but the lore, and it's really what J.J. Abrams is good at, the lore in his whole mystery box thing, and how did the alien and the monster get here? Even after rewatching Cloverfield, that was the big question that kept me interested in it. 10 Cloverfield Lane, or whatever the number was before it. Or is it 10 Cloverfield Lane? Because I know we yeah. pronounce. I know. Okay. Because I know we screwed up on Blaze Runner. Or Blaze Runner. 420. 420, bruh. No, we screwed up there. So 10 Cloverfield Lane was really good, but that was a different type of movie, loosely connected to these. This one tries to go and explain the monster, and it really just didn't hit the mark. It was a mess, like I said. Didn't love it. I didn't hate it. We talked a little bit about Netflix movies, and I think we rated Bright a little higher because it was on Netflix. I don't know if I'm going to give this one the benefit of that because generally the vibe I get from Bright is it was always intended to be on Netflix. The vibe I got from this one is Paramount was like, holy shit, this movie is not good. Oh, it's an exclusive to Netflix, and that's the way it was all along. Now, I love the marketing behind it. I love the concept of dropping a movie the night of the Super Bowl and not telling anybody, but oops, we forgot to make a good movie.
And before we get into mine, I gave it a 47. I think that releasing the trailer during the Super Bowl was a really innovative thing to do, but that was pretty much the only innovative thing about the movie because the rest of the movie, like you said, borrowed from basically every other like horror space movie that came before it. Like, it borrowed so much from Event Horizon, which is one of my guilty pleasure horror movies. It's, like, insane. Like, it's almost the same movie, like, trying to mess with God Particle. Replace God Particle with, like, Black Hole, and it is Event Horizon. And it borrowed a ton from Alien, and also, I thought, a little bit from Life, which came out a little more recently. But I think it was a good idea to do it, or to drop the movie the way they did. Because can you imagine if they did all the marketing and then like it, or if it was a movie that was to come out in theaters, like it would have just completely bombed. But at least they were able to get a little buzz going for it by giving it such a cool release, which I thought was a good idea.
So I gave it a 59, 1 point less than I gave it Maze Runner, significantly less than I gave it Cloverfield, and much less than I gave it 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I gave an 87 because I loved
Cloverfield Lane.
Yep, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Yep,
thank you.
It was just. It was a mess. It was a mess. And from my understanding, it was not initially intended to be a Cloverfield movie, much like 10 Cloverfield Lane was not going to be a Cloverfield movie. That was, I think, called The Cellar initially. It had nothing to do with it. And even 10 Cloverfield Lane, they've said, is a blood relative to Cloverfield. I think that's how J.J. Abrams described it. And this one, whether it was the initial intention or not, they really tried to tie in to Cloverfield. Like they really tried to tie this one into the first one, but also do so in a way they also explained the last one as well, because they're all set in different time periods. Spoiler alert. Forgot to say that. If you haven't seen it yet, spoiler alert right here. Just skip ahead. And it's on Netflix. Go watch it. It's all set in different time periods. The 2008 Cloverfield is set in 2008. 10 Cloverfield Lane is set in 2016. And this one's set in 2028. And from my understanding, after watching ridiculous YouTube videos all day, and since I watched it on Sunday, the point is that in the beginning of Cloverfield Paradox, there's a man on a newscast who talks about if they charge up this God particle, this thing on the ship that's going to give, you know, unlimited energy, which is a thing that actually exists. Bill and I talked about it somewhere.
Allegedly.
So go find that video. Yeah. So it allegedly exists. It can create limited energy. That's what they're trying to do on this spaceship. And this guy's on TV talking about it, and he says they're really messing with some danger here because they can, you know, rip into space-time, and they can have different dimensions and realities merging and crossing over. And I guess that is the whole point. Because if you really try to think about this movie on a base level and how they all connect, it doesn't make sense. You have to break it down piece by piece for it to truly make sense that all three movies have these Cloverfield monsters or these demons, and they just happen in separate universes. Like when this happened, it resulted in the 10 Cloverfield Lane universe happening. When this issue happened or this disaster happened on the spaceship, it resulted in the 2008 Cloverfield happening. And when it happened, it sent a monster down to Earth immediately, and then it sent them to a different reality and different Earth. It's all over the place. It's incredibly convoluted and mixed up. And here's my issue with it. Like, if you want to make it a mess and you want to make it ambiguous and different, I'm okay with that. But don't make your fucking trailer during the Super Bowl say, 10 years ago, something arrived, find out why. Because you don't find out why.
Yeah.
Like, that's my issue. And I know we went through this with Star Wars. People, hey, you know, I want to know who Snoke is. Whether you want to know who Snoke is or not, they never advertise in the trailers. You find out who Snoke is in this one, folks. You find out his backstory. Like, that's my thing. Like, I'm okay with not finding things out and things being ambiguous and not needing to be explained. But don't market the shit to me like I'm going to have it explained. Because guess what? Not everyone's like me, a dweeb that's going to go watch 100 Paradox and Cloverfield tie-in explained videos on YouTube to try to understand it more. You know, and I'm not a huge fan of these franchises to begin with, like some people are, who, you know, they've noted that there's a same drink in this one called Slusha, which connects all of J.J. Abrams' movies. And, you know, the guy in the newscast has the same last name as John Goodman's character in 10 Cloverfield Lane, and they might be brothers, you know? So it's like, don't market it like I'm going to know from this movie when you don't find out shit from this movie. You really don't. There's no explanation at all.
It's kind of like Prometheus in that way. I felt like, even though Ridley Scott, I believe, came out and said this isn't really an Alien prequel, there was a lot of elements of marketing it, and maybe it was just internet buzz at the time, and it could be on me. But you went into Prometheus, and you're like, holy shit, we're going to find out how the aliens came about. And then you get like a loose tie-in with the space trucker, but you don't get a full explanation. Then you're left like wondering, well, should I even have an explanation? Because it's going to be disappointing. So yeah, they use the explanation for why, but also Cloverfield's a 10-year-old movie. So how many people really care about the origin of this big monster that wrecked TJ Miller in 2008? I think the fan base is there somewhere, but overall, most of the hype seemed to be that, holy shit, we're getting a feature movie on Netflix, which was really cool. But it goes back to the point, if you know, if you're going to do that, and this is going to be your big splash and your big marketing campaign, then make sure the movie's good.
Yeah, I almost think they should not say anything about it. It's almost good to not try and go into the origins unless you're going to give us something interesting or something good or like worthwhile.
It frustrated me in that sense because they have great actors. I thought the script was really weak. They gave Chris O'Dowd so many ridiculous lines. Yeah. When he loses his arm, like,
it looked awful.
It looked terrible.
The direction seemed fine. It came back to general script writing. It just wasn't a good story, and if you start with a bad story, it's hard to make a good movie out of that. And that's what I felt went wrong here. Oh, and his arm is hanging off, and it's like this, the meat and the bone showing through, and it looks like one of those ham hocks from the old Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah, I know.
That's all I kept thinking. Leonardo
tried to kill me.
It just looks like a fucking, like, Elmer Fudd is about to dive into a ham hock.
Not only was it nonsensical in some sorts, at least in terms of the way they marketed it, but it also felt like kind of a B science fiction movie. You know, that was the disappointing part, because they had great actors, great actresses. The plan for the movie I thought was really cool. I love that idea. I love that viral concept. But you feel like you got kind of, and I'm going to borrow this line from a Variety article I read today about the dangers of marketing a movie like that. You feel like you got P.T. Barnum'd. You feel like you were suckered into this shit because you didn't get what you thought you were getting. And I love ambiguous endings. I've said it many times, whether it be, you know, Gone Girl, or whether you leave characters that you don't have explained, like, you know, Snoke, we mentioned from Star Wars. I don't mind that when it works, but don't market to me that I'm going to get something and then I don't get it. And I know it was literally marketed to us for 30 minutes. Like, we had it and then we watched the movie. But still, like, you go into it with an expectation. You know, you feel kind of used in that sense.
It destroys credibility. If they tried to do this in the future with a good movie, people are going to be a little more hesitant. And also from Netflix's side, watch an episode of Altered Carbon last night, which kicks ass. You got all these great originals coming from Netflix, and Netflix just dumped millions of dollars to buy this movie. And you wonder, like, what cool stuff are we being deprived of? You know, maybe nothing, but there's a lot of cool shit out there. And this was a big splashy move, and it was a cool concept. I keep saying cool a lot. I know. Neat concept that fell flat because it just wasn't a good movie. And going forward in the future, I'm going to be a little more hesitant, unless it's Bright 2, because I really want to see Jacoby again.
I think I'll keep giving Netflix an infinite amount of chances because of not necessarily Bright, which although we thought Bright was good, but we know that Netflix is capable of producing original content that's very good. So no matter what movie original movie Netflix drops, I'm probably going to watch it regardless because it's a free feature length movies. Like you really can't go wrong.
I feel like you can't say no if you're Netflix when they offer you this movie too, right? Like you got to take a chance on it. And there's some fans who seem to love it. Our buddy Robbie over at Barstow wrote a review and he had somebody reply to him and said, I thought it was near perfect as a big Cloverfield fan. I mean, that's fair. Hey, if the fans love it, then you know what? Again, good. That's great. I guess that's what matters. My big issue again, and I'll say it for 100th time, is the fact that it was marketed as some sort of tie-in, and it really wasn't. It just wasn't. It was, but it wasn't.
And it is one of those movies I can see some people liking, but I'm just not galaxy-brained enough to be one of those folks.
The best way to describe how it ties into the Cloverfield universe is that it ties in, but they don't really tell you how it ties in. Like, you just kind of have to take some leaps. And some fans have done some great work on YouTube. If you really want to dive into it like I did, go for it. Because it makes sense of a few more things, but still at the same time, it leaves too many things open. And it's too many jumps and leaps you have to make to get there if you're going to market the movie as something that's going to explain to you why something happened in a movie from 10 years ago.
I know one thing that I didn't like about Cloverfield, and this comes from my unique perspective as a Colts fan. And I'm sorry, I haven't checked the news tonight, but as a Colts fan, I hate when something is promised to me, like something's promised to me in advance, and then that thing doesn't happen. I hate that. I can't stand that. If that were to happen to me, I would be very upset with it. And that's what I felt like happened with Cloverfield. I felt like I was going to get a good movie right away, and it just didn't occur. So that's my topical joke.
This is a different dimensional Trill Ballins, because I feel like in the first part of this pod, he knew the news. And now this one, I don't know. You'll figure that out. You're from just a different dimension. So my big question to you just before we go here, how excited are you for another Cloverfield? Do you want another Cloverfield?
I don't know if I care at this point, honestly. I like 10 Cloverfield Lane, but again, that not really that much of a Cloverfield movie. The best explanation I found was that the company that makes Slusho, I believe, in the J.J. Abrams universe is a Japanese conglomerate, and that they were doing some deep sea drilling or something like that, and it unleashed some sort of amoeba or cell that grew to be the Cloverfield monster in a rapid rate. That's a much cooler explanation than some people messed around and opened up an interdimensional rift and then this monster came down, which is kind of what I'm leaning towards right now.
I guess that this event does wake up these monsters or does put them into Earth in different dimensions. And then things like you just explained with the Slusho and the corporation that owns them, something with a T. But I also know John Goodman's character from the last movie. It's been explained he worked for that company in some respect. I guess they woke up that monster that was now there. So there's a lot of ways to connect these and make sense of these if you go on the internet and you look it up. But I like that with movies that don't promise me the movie's going to explain it to me directly. Trill, you're not looking forward to a fourth. Ken Jack, you shook your head. You don't want a fourth one either. There's another one coming out in October. So
is it really?
It's October 28th. It's called Overlord. Wyatt Russell's in it, Kurt Russell's son. Overlord is about two American soldiers in World War II who drop behind enemy lines and see that the Nazis are using some sort of extraterrestrial or different like powers against
Wolfenstein.
Yeah. How original.
Yeah. Or Captain America.
Yeah. I don't know, man. And that's a Cloverfield movie? I didn't even know that. That's bad because I'm on a movie podcast.
One's in 1940. So I guess that explains away the idea that they put monsters in different universes, which is what that guy explains in the newscast in Cloverfield Paradox. I guess they don't just put it into their universe. They put it into 2016, 2008, and 1940s.
This is hurting my baby brain, dude. That's the thing about J.J. Abrams. He can give you the mystery, but then the explanation is usually disappointing.
So Cloverfield Paradox, not Cloverfield. Cloverfield Paradox, a third of the Cloverfield movies. We just were not into it. Fans seem to like it, and you know what? If that's the case, then good for them, and I'm happy for them. Because when fans like something, just like Maze Runner, if you liked it and you're a fan, you know what? I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, if you liked it, it just means you liked the movie. It doesn't mean anything more. You know?
Good for you.
Just like if a coach says he doesn't want to be on your team, it doesn't mean that your team's in utter fucking disarray and your quarterback may never play another snap. There's no deeper meaning to things is what I'm trying to say.
It's a good point. Good point. All right. Cloverfield Paradox, Maze Runner. Our review next week will be 50 Shades Freed. On the other side of this break, listener and follower questions. We're going to answer all of them. From food to movies, we got a lot. We'll be right back on Lights, Camera, Podcast. So you'll like this one, Kevin. You guys hear about this? You guys see about this one? Big move by Netflix and Paramount over the weekend during the Super Bowl. They dropped the trailer for the third Cloverfield movie, The Cloverfield Paradox, and released the movie right after the game. Big news. Big movie news. Unfortunately, it has not been well received. Boy, I haven't seen Netflix drop such a big piece of shit since they got rid of Kevin Spacey. So yeah, the Cloverfield Paradox came out this weekend, folks. A lot of people watched it right after the Super Bowl. It's about a $1 trillion effort to help mankind from space that turns out to be a big waste of time. The big twist? It's that it turns out it was just an Elon Musk biopic. Yeah, but seriously, folks, the Cloverfield Paradox, it was all right. It wasn't that bad, right, Kevin? Yeah, we enjoyed it. It's all about trying to make their Hadron Collider work prop. If you ask me, the best way to fix hadrons is a little something I like to call Viagra. And finally, you guys hear about this? You guys see this one? The new Maze Runner movie came out. Maze Runner: The Death Cure, featuring young star Dylan O'Brien in the lead role. You guys see this movie yet? I saw it the other day, and boy, I have not seen somebody named O'Brien struggle to navigate something this much since I screwed over Conan at NBC. All right, everybody, we have a great show ahead. Give it up one more time for Kevin Eubanks and the Tonight Show Band. All right, we're back. Light Camera Podcast. Listener mailbag time. We got a lot of them, a lot of repeat questions too. A lot of questions about beans. We'll get to that. First question, we got a couple of these. They want to know about the website and why we haven't done more videos and all those things we've promised. So I got to address that off the top. You know, there's no issues we're in, but it's a better to be safe than sorry situation. And I thought it would be resolved by now. It's not. Not at the fault of anybody, just how these things work. And when it's resolved, we'll be right back up and running. Because somebody else asked about who we would have playing in the Trump biopic. And I'm telling you, Ken, Jack, and I wrote a great blog about that. And whenever we can release that damn website, that's the first thing that's going up. So that's the answer to that. That's why there's not been more content. Smart thing to do, and nobody's at fault here. It's better to be safe than sorry, because we want to keep doing these without any issues, and we have so far. So lots more coming, hopefully soon. We don't know. Ken Jack, this one's for you. Did you use a fork to eat those beans with popcorn? And let me just say, if you didn't see the video on Twitter, Ken Jack did pour baked beans, actual baked beans, into his popcorn. We documented it and put it on Twitter, and he ate it. But did you eat it with a fork or with your hands?
I didn't think ahead, and I ate with my hands. And Jeff, being the good friend he is, went and got napkins for me after the fact because I forgot to bring them. And you know what, bitch? They tasted great. And as much as I like to talk shit about people on the internet, I hope no one talks shit about eating beans and popcorn combined before they try it, because the salty and the sweet combined, it was delicious. I might try it at home.
So now you could argue that a lot of what we do and talk about is not serious, but some may see it as serious. And I think this question or comment was serious. This one's to Ken Jack. Fuck off with your beans and popcorn bullshit. That's worse than milk duds and popcorn. Nothing Ken Jack says about film is valid until he issues a public apology.
I apologize that you took a big fat dump in your diaper, you
Whoa. Those are our listeners, Ken Jack.
He's officially has a one episode ban from LCP till he apologizes for asking me to make an apology for eating delicious beans and popcorn.
All right. Would you rather? Would you rather be in the Transformers universe or the Fast and the Furious universe?
That's a really good question, because my gut instinct is to say the Fast and the Furious universe, because those are the better movies. But if I'm thinking about just a universe to be in, I'd want to be in the universe. I'd want to be in the universe with the big fucking robots, dude.
I'm with Trill, but mostly because I don't know how to drive sticks, so I'd be useless in the Fast and the Furious universe.
Well, the thing about if I were in the Fast and the Furious universe, there'd be no difference in my life. I'd still be sitting here at my computer playing Fortnite and fucking just generally being worthless. But if I were in the Transformers universe, then I'd be doing that while being absolutely terrified. I'd be killed by a robot who would then threaten to fuck my wife.
I'm going to side with you guys. I'd have to say Transformers, only because, you know what? If we survive the apocalypse, great technology because of the AllSpark. So lots of great potential there. Tougher to navigate, but lots of great potential. Yep. Here's another question. This is maybe my favorite question we got. Do you think genes exist in the Star Wars universe?
Damn.
Good question.
That's a great question. So we have to go back to the origin of jeans, right? So jeans came about for, as a need for workwear type pants. I believe Levi Strauss is credited with inventing the modern blue jean, and the pockets in the back served a function. Now I'm trying to think of any specific Star Wars jobs, but I would have to imagine there are a lot of jobs in the Star Wars universe that would require pants to hold stuff, but also there are a lot more different alien races that might have more hands to hold the tools themselves. And there might also be more fabrics that have better moisture wicking or better comfort. I'm thinking something like Under Armour. So I don't think jeans are in the Star Wars universe because I don't think there's a need for jeans. I think they've innovated beyond what jeans were originally required for. If jeans don't exist, though, is jean jamming still a thing in the Star Wars universe?
I feel like Han Solo's pants are as close to jeans as there are. I feel like those are probably similar to jeans.
Are they five pockets or do they have trouser pockets, Han Solo's pants? That's what I want to know. Because if they're five pockets, then there's a chance that jeans don't exist because maybe the denim fabric was never – the denim weave of cotton was never created. Cotton – probably does exist from all the Jedi robes that we've seen, although it might not be cotton itself. It might be a different plant that creates a similar fabric.
How many belt holes, though, in the Star Wars jean universe?
It's a laser belt, like a lightsaber. You got to be real careful with that shit, though.
Hey, he does wear a belt. Yeah, I think Han Solo's pants are as similar to jeans as you get. I love that question, though.
Like, I don't think jeans exist, but if they do exist, what type of wash would they wear? Would it be like a classier dark wash or would it be a more worn light wash? Like what would be in style?
So do jeans exist in the Star Wars universe? All right. From jeans to hockey. Better hockey movie, Miracle or Mighty Ducks?
Miracle. Miracle's like an actual movie. Mighty Ducks is a movie that you go back and you watch when you're 30 and you feel so bad because you made your parents go to watch that with you. Now, I probably still like it, but Miracle is like one of the – we talked about Rudy last week. Miracle is one of those movies that's designed to get someone like me to feel emotions.
Both Disney movies, actually. Go figure.
This is a passionate plea for the Anaheim Ducks to bring back the original Mighty Ducks uniforms because those are some of the greatest uniforms in sports history. It's idiotic not to wear those full time. They would sell so well.
Will you ever review TV shows instead of bad movies? No. Another one, does Jeff know he sounds like Kevin from The League? That was the guy who lied about 9/11. Not lied about
9/11. Yeah. Kevin Rezanizzi.
Steve Rezanizzi. Steve Rezanizzi. Yeah, I don't know.
People have tweeted this before. I've seen people say that's who I sound like. I don't know. Denny's or IHOP?
IHOP.
I think I've been to a Denny's once, but there's an IHOP in my town that I went to every now and then.
There's a Denny's in Bloomington, Indiana. That was pretty close to campus if you had a car that I went to a few times. But IHOP's more, if I want breakfast, I'm going to IHOP because I feel like the quality is just a little bit better than Denny's. And also the Denny's social media account pisses me off. So
that's a good point.
Bay likes pancakes, kissy emoji, fucking 1,000 retweets.
I'll take IHOP. What's your favorite documentary? My favorite is hands down the Enron movie, Enron, the Smartest Guys in the Room. It's an incredible documentary. If you don't know much about the Enron story, you watch that movie and you're just stunned. What they did and what they got away with for as long as they did is wild. It's wild shit what Enron did. And sad, but also insane. So Enron, the Smartest Guys in the Room. Highly suggest people go out and watch that one.
I think if I had to pick, I don't know if this only apply to a documentary movie or can it be a series. Like I would pick Cosmos if I could. It's amazing. Neil deGrasse Tyson's a big gassy fart on Twitter, but he's pretty interesting as a host. if it had to be a movie, I think that movie, the White Helmets, right, about the rescue workers in Syria, that was really been really sad.
I the Bill Cunningham New York documentary. So there's a fashion photographer for the New York Times, and he passed away last year. And he just went out and took
pictures of people on the streets and what they wore, and they were in the style section, but the documentary was all about him, and it was just real fascinating. And I like those documentaries that have a subject that you don't think would be that interesting. One that everyone's probably seen that I really enjoy, that it probably everyone likes it to the point where it's like basic to like it now, is Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Yeah.
Cause everyone's seen that. That's something everyone can relate to, because that started off the whole chef's table thing. I really like that one too, because that's another thing that is just like a really myopic subject and self-contained, but it's so fascinating in its own containment that you're like, I'm glad somebody's making a documentary about this. I also like Coney 2012.
We have to find him. He's got to get in movies soon, right?
Hold on, do more. This one's for Ken Jack. Ken Jack, rank the following: Goss God, Chris Pratt, and Tom Cruise's fake ass.
Oh, man. Tom Cruise's bussy is something I think about on the daily. Bussy.
Just want to bust it open.
that bussy. I don't know. That's rough. I think
that's one of those words that you can smell that word.
I think just because now that we're thinking about it, Tom Cruise's boy bussy, it goes number one. Then we got Gosling, then Pratt.
All right. Wow. I'm just fucking tears.
Just smelling a deflated basketball right now.
All right. What's next? Hold on. So many. How many movies has Jeff rated 100 out of 100? Since 2006, none. Only 3 99s: Blade Runner 2049, Mad Max Fury Road, and The Departed. Hundreds would be Godfather, Toy Story 1 and 2. 3 is probably a fucking 100 now that I think about it. It's still high up there. What else? Empire Strikes Back. So, yeah, but no 100 since I've been doing this in 2006. Thoughts on Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs? Many people are asking us about this, and by many, I mean just like a couple. But on Reddit, somebody mentioned it. On Twitter, we've had it tweeted at us. Are you guys excited for the next Wes Anderson movie, especially being a stop-motion movie like Fantastic Mr. Fox? I'm all in. I'm buttered, obviously.
Yeah, Fantastic Mr. Fox was one of Wes Anderson's best films, so I'm really excited about this one. I don't know much about it, other than it's a stop motion movie and it's about dogs and there might be an island involved and the dogs might be on the island. And Bill Murray might voice a dog. I don't know. I'm just making that up. I'm just guessing. Maybe. I'm excited.
I'm not a big Wes Anderson fan, as you guys know, but I do love dogs. I also love Target. I also love Long Walks to and from the Fridge. And also the other basic white girl stuff. So I'm all in on this movie. I'm going to butter it up and I'm ready to see it.
Oscars related question. What's your favorite best picture winner since 2000? I'll read them off quick. Gladiator, A Beautiful Mind, Chicago, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Million Dollar Baby, Crash, The Departed, No Country for Old Men, Slumdog Millionaire. Did you laugh at Crash?
Yeah.
Okay. Slumdog Millionaire, The Hurt Locker, King's Speech, The Artist, Argo, 12 Years a Slave, Birdman, Spotlight, and Moonlight. I didn't realize two lights won back-to-back years. Mine's The Departed. I just said I gave it a 99. So mine's The Departed. But what about you guys? Favorite Best Picture winner since 2000?
I'm a big No Country for Old Men stan. I will cape hard for that movie, as they say on Twitter. And there are a lot of other good ones in there. I liked Argo a lot as well. And The Departed too, like you said, but I don't think The Departed was as good as some of the others you mentioned.
I think I might go Gladiator, more for nostalgia than anything. This is, if it's personal favorites, I'm picking Gladiator. But if I had to pick what I think is objectively the best, it'd probably be No Country for Old Men.
Was the weakest Crash? Okay.
Artist.
So another question was, rank your least favorite best picture winners 3 to 5. We may do that eventually, but off the top of your head, let's mix up that question a bit. Which of those movies I named is your least favorite? I may have to say Crash. I think Crash, but you're right. The Artist is up there too. The Artist was an okay silent movie. It was just right time, right place. It pulled on Hollywood's heartstrings and they fucking gave it Best Picture. Even though, while the person may not be very popular, I did think Midnight in Paris is probably the best movie that year. I did like Moneyball as well. Big Moneyball fan.
Yeah, I'm not a Crash guy. I'll challenge Jeff on this one. I'm not a Birdman guy either. I was one of the people that saw that and I'm like, I don't really get it. I think Birdman, that was a really weak year, and I think it won on the back of that. That might be a hot, that might be the hottest take I've ever unleashed on this podcast, but if you put Birdman in 2016 or 2017, I don't know if it gets it.
Interesting.
I think I'm picking The Artist. I disagree with your opinion, by the way, Charles. I just have to say that. But also, I think I'm picking The Artist. Crash was also very bad, but The Artist was just so big, pretentious, dumb burp in my mouth, and right into my mouth. I hated it.
I love Birdman. Man, I get why people don't like it. I just, every time I watch that movie, I love it more and more. That was a great year for movies. And also, that was the year that Eddie Redmayne beat the Keatonicense Michael Keaton for best actor in a leading role. He played Stephen Hawking, and I was just bummed out. He did a great job as Stephen Hawking, but Michael Keaton, come on, man. Yeah, my top five movies from the year of The Artist were Moneyball, Midnight in Paris, The Muppets, 50-50, and then Drive.
Some of those early 2000s, though, back when they still had five in the category, I think it's way back. It's not even early 2000s. I think they started doing more later and later. Some of those movies that are nominated were wild. Like in 2000, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was nominated for a Best Picture. And I enjoyed that movie, but just put all the best pictures into a pile and pick them out randomly. Just like you're getting Halloween candy. You just imagine pulling Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon out of the pile while Ken Jack gets something like The Departed. And you're like, oh, fudge.
Always funny to remember that all three Lord of the Rings were nominated too. Those were cinematic achievements and works of art. And whether you like what Lord of the Rings is or not is another question, but they were very well heralded movies. And the third one won Best Picture.
And the second one is the best, though. The Two Towers is the best. Oh, yeah. Is that the next question?
I love Two Towers. The next question is a little different. It's compare and contrast the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit films. And I telegraphed this a little bit with Maze Runner. Oh, was it Maze Runner? Oh, no, we were talking about young adult novels. We talked about splitting up the last Hunger Games. I despise the Hobbit movies because they took a book that was, first of all, it was more of a children's book, The Hobbit, than was The Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings is more of an adult novel. And they took a book in The Hobbit that was shorter than every single individual Lord of the Rings movie, and they split it up into three movies, despite the fact each longer Lord of the Rings book got just one movie. And now they did it because of money, obviously, but I mean, oh man, I just don't understand the love at all for those Hobbit movies. And I know they're critically not well-received, so I know it's not love, but I know there's fans who do love them, and I just, that's a short story stretched very thin over three very long movies.
They had to add in a fake storyline with Legolas, and that didn't actually happen in the books. I don't know, man. I kind of felt like Peter Jackson got blackmailed into doing those movies, even though he didn't. And I don't think there's any blackmail material on him, but I don't know why he did those, because it just didn't even come close. It didn't even sniff the worst money. Lord of the Rings movie. Yeah, I mean, money. Yeah, maybe that's it.
It is money, and everyone says that to me every time I yell online about this. But, I mean, look, whether it's money or not, I recognize that, but it still upsets me. Other questions? Thoughts on Crystal Pepsi?
Tastes okay. Hard to get past the mental disconnect between drinking something that feels like it should be traditional soda color and is Crystal. It's a mental block there.
I have no opinion. I've never tried it, so I can't say for sure. That Mountain Dew commercial that Morgan Freeman did during the big game on Sunday, I don't know. Don't know how I felt about that. Maybe that's our generation's version of Crystal Pepsi, but I don't know how I feel about that.
In the 90s, Saturday Night Live did fake commercials. They probably still do it time for time, but it was on like weekly. They had a weekly fake commercial, and there was one for Crystal Gravy. That was a great roast of Crystal Pepsi. It's hard to come back from that.
You can buy Crystal Pepsi now.
Yeah, they brought it back. The Tab was one of the original Diet Colas. I don't know if it's still around, but it has a cola taste, but it's clear. It's not just somewhat clear. I don't know. I like that. I like pouring a nice glass. You guys know I crunch my ice. I'm a big ice cruncher. It's probably some underlying medical condition that I should go to a doctor to get it checked out. But fuck that. That's expensive. I like seeing that nice bubbly, you know, dark cola caramel tint. And when I'm enjoying a cola, that's what I want to see. I don't feel like I'm getting the full soda experience if it's clear. And I feel that way about Sprite. If I'm going to drink a soda, it's going to be a soda, not lemon lime beverage.
How much butter do you actually put on an average popcorn bag or box?
First off, this is a great fucking question. The butter, and this goes out to my fellas in relationships. Butter can be a very contentious issue with your significant other because my wife likes tons of butter. I'm talking multiple pumps, lots of butter. I actually like no butter. I'm a dry guy. I go in dry with the popcorn. But I love my wife so much that I'm willing to let her butter that popcorn up and I'll eat it and still enjoy it. But I would rather just have dry popcorn with extra salt, maybe a little bit of that kernel seasonings cheddar shit on that too. Are you guys in relationships where you both like butter or are one of you dry guys?
I've stopped putting butter in my popcorn, which I didn't do a lot of it. And neutral, I don't have that issue. It's not a big deal to her. It doesn't matter if she even does eat the popcorn. But I would always put a little bit on top. I shake it over the trash can. I was a small butter guy. Now I'm a no butter guy.
The last time we went to AMC together, I got butter on it. I think that was the first time I actually put butter on my popcorn in a really long time. I'm like, Trill, I'm mostly a dry guy through and through in all aspects of life.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry. Am I allowed to elaborate without getting pooped up? Okay, so this is what I mean. And then there's no mess to clean up. I mean, it's the most efficient way to do it.
Interesting. It's good to know. You learn a lot here. Related to that, somebody said they saw someone put jalapenos on their popcorn. Thoughts?
I make the popcorn soggy. The taste combination I'm fine with, but it's the consistency of the popcorn because the jalapenos have the jalapeno juice that dribbles down and gets the popcorn all soggy. That's not what I'm trying to do. That's actually one of my complaints about the liquid butter. I don't like that mushy popcorn.
Yeah, I'm not in on that either. I do like spicy foods, a huge spicy food guy over here, but I don't know how that works with popcorn. It's like Trill said, soggy popcorn is probably like one of the most disgusting things you can think of. Almost like, Jeff, I'm sure you know, whenever we see most food in the city, basically by the time, if you ever order fries, by the time it gets to you, they're soggy as shit. And soggy fries,
yeah,
so bad. Disgusting.
Upscale popcorneries like Garrett's in Chicago will have a jalapeno flavor. So you get the seasoning on the popcorn. And they probably have them in the bag, too, that you buy at Walgreens. That's delicious. No problem there. It's just actual jalapeno slices on that. Questionable. I'm not going to hate you for doing that. If you need your spicy fix, then get it.
Yeah, they make the seasoning, like you mentioned, with the cheddar, but they make it jalapeno style. So you can get that. So if the person who submitted the question sees that same person with the jalapenos, give that little tip.
I need to add, when I go to a sporting event and I get nachos, I put the jalapenos in the cheese. So when I dip the nacho into the cheese, I get the jalapeno with the cheese and it doesn't make the chip soggy. Just a little life pro hack.
Name your favorite comedy sequel. Favorite comedy sequel. I'll name mine quick. 22 Jump Street. I think. Yeah, we're going to go with 22 Jump Street. That's the first one that came to mind.
My brain immediately goes to Ace Ventura 2, so I'll just stay there. No need to think about it any further.
Oh, that's a good question. I'm a huge Wayne's World guy, and Wayne's World 2 is not better than Wayne's World 1, but I still love Wayne's World 2 and Wayne's Stock. So that, I think that's my favorite comedy sequel.
That's really all over the map, those three. I like that. See, we're diverse here with movies.
Despite having a standard deviation of 2 on our like ratings today.
Name a director actor combo you want off the top of your head. So an actor and director you want to see work together.
I'd like to see Christopher Nolan and Idris Elba.
Ooh, I like that.
I do like that. I like that. That's a good one. He would fit perfectly in his movies.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
That's such a great dramatic vibe. Lord and Miller. Chris Lord, Phil Miller, or is it Phil Lord and Chris Miller? I always mix them up. The guys that did, well, obviously they started on Han Solo. They didn't finish it. They did Lego Movie and the Jump Street movies. I want to see them with Ryan Gosling. I want to see Gosling in a comedy. Love his chops in Nice Guys. He's always funny. Got great humor. So yeah, give me more Goss God with Lord and Miller. Somebody asked us this question or made a statement and they didn't continue it and they just finished it halfway through. It says, I think the greatest debate of this generation is whether chocolate is considered. And that's all it says.
Considered candy?
I really want to know. So if you wrote that question, please finish it.
I definitely consider chocolate.
That question was submitted by the director of The Snowman.
So here you go. Will you guys ever stop hating on old movies and maybe throw in a classic movie review?
I would love to go back and review some of them on the podcast. I think maybe at some point we'll do that. We just haven't gotten around to that. But I do think we have a recency bias. Ken Jack hates old movies. I don't hate them. I would just prefer to watch something that's more recent than just a random movie from the 50s.
I think the movies we have out now are just better.
Unlike athletics, movies is something where people are like directly inspired by previous generations. And I know LeBron will say like Michael Jordan was a huge influence, but you know, they'll maybe take a shot or Kobe will do a step back that he learned from MJ's game. But like people making movies today will use techniques that they got directly from previous directors. They'll learn from them and be mentored by them. So I think from an evolutionary standpoint, breaking down old movies is more of an exercise in, you know, why rather than like, why was this groundbreaking rather than the actual movie themselves? Because shit, if I watch Citizen Kane now, I mean, I'm sure it'd be a great movie, but I would rather watch like Arrival. It'd just be more entertaining to me. That doesn't mean Arrival's better than Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane's great, but I think in order to consider the whole thing, you have to understand why Citizen Kane was great. And I don't know if I'm smart enough to do that. Again, it's bad to say on a movie podcast, but this podcast is more about just like talking about movies from our perspective, which is not like cinema buffs. And when I listen to someone get technical about a movie, they have to break it down to me like I'm 5 years old.
How do you guys go to the theater so often when people are so fucking annoying? That's a good question. I enjoy it. I like complaining about when there's somebody who's crazy, or I like talking about it at least. I think it's funny, but I don't know if they're annoying enough to ruin seeing it on a big screen. I like seeing a movie on a big screen with the audio, with the popcorn. It's an experience. And you really separate yourself because you really don't take your phone out. You know, you don't have your computer. You don't have all this and that. And I think it's that experience that I like the most about it.
I want to stress this, and this is something that brings me a lot of joy. The Saturday 11 a.m. or the Sunday 11 a.m. showing of a movie is sublime. And I know it sounds insane because we normally associate going to movies with an evening event. But if you ever have time and you're hungover on Sunday morning and you have nothing to do, go check out a movie at 11 a.m. or noon because nobody will be there. My perspective might be different because I don't live in New York City like these guys do, where there's just people at every turn. But no one's in my theater when I go. And the way they have it now where you can reserve your seats, I reserve my seats away from other people. I don't care what seat position I get. I got to be on an aisle because I piss like a racehorse. Again, probably unrelated to my undiagnosed medical condition with chewing ice. But aside from that, like I tend to go to movies when other people aren't there because I'm galaxy brain.
You need the full screen experience. It doesn't really watching it at home or waiting to come out on like a streaming service just doesn't really compare to the big screen experience. Like I saw Interstellar in like IMAX 3D and blah, 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 blah. And I thought I was like fucking incredible. And then you watch it again on Netflix like 3 years later and you're like, this is good, but not as good. And you feel like you don't get as full of an experience.
Not much is lost in translation for me between watching a movie on a screen versus watching it at home, unless it's a huge tentpole release. Maybe you consider Interstellar to be one of those. I wouldn't wait to see The Last Jedi. I would go to a packed theater to see that. I don't care. But if I'm going to see Flatliners, I'm not going to see it with other people, bro. I'm by myself. I'm solo. Dry guy on the popcorn and everything.
Trill, how did you gain so many followers? But much more importantly, would you like to dispel the rumors you've lost a step? I said I'd ask this one.
Now, I don't know how I gained so many followers, but also like my followers are funny too. I love the replies and they tend to be a really cool group of people. Every now and then I'll get some people who don't like me or whatever, which just comes with the territory. And as for like the lost step thing, yeah, I would say I lost a step. My account's way different now than it used to be. Now I just normally complain and tweet out grievances and have random things. I used to change brands all the time and do more random stuff. And it was much funnier, I got to admit. You know, if you want to unfollow, that's fine because it's different. I don't have the energy for it anymore. Twitter now is a much more exhausting place than it was 2 years ago. People are just like fucking arguing all the time and everybody's on edge and
you know, you make fun of somebody and then people say, well, you can't do that. And even if it's lighthearted, and then I feel bad about it too. You know, I just don't want to do that anymore. So I don't just like, yeah, I like being on it for the people, but I don't get as much pleasure as I used to. I know that's kind of a depressing answer, but most people I've talked to feel that way about Twitter. It's just, it's something we're addicted to, which is fucked up. It used to be fun when brands would screw up on Twitter because it was a common uniting factor in terms of everybody piling on a brand. Nobody had any like qualms about piling on a brand because, you know, they're so out of touch. But now it's just like constant pile-ons on people. And I don't think that's productive. And I've been guilty of it before, but I don't get enjoyment out of it anymore. I've moved on to things like fucking Fortnite.
We got this one a lot. Who is your current celebrity crush? And I'll mix a couple because it's male and female.
I don't want to say the Goss God, but the Goss God's always going to be number one for me until someone dethrones him. With female, it's just weird. You know, I feel bad about saying, oh yeah, like I'm a 30-year-old man and I have a celebrity crush. I will say current, after watching Molly's Game, like Jessica Chastain is probably up there just because she was so fucking good in that movie. When we say crush, it's not just appearance. It's just like general, you know, acting ability and like badassery. And that was really cool movie for her to be in.
I think male for me is Danny Glover in most recency. Since I think I agree with you. I'm not going to pick the Goss God just because it's just too obvious.
Are you meaning to say Danny Glover again?
Yes, I thought it was
Danny
funny
Glover,
callback.
Like Lethal Weapon, Danny Glover.
I thought it was a funny callback to earlier. No,
he may have retired, but like, I still love him.
But yeah, no, it's Donald Glover. I'm saying Donnie, but it's Donald Glover. It's Donald Glover, just because seeing him in the Lando cape and doing his poses and everything, it got the juices flowing. I don't have a female actress crush because I have a girlfriend and I'm thoroughly devoted to her, unlike you slops.
Look, one of the agreements for me to do this podcast was that Jeff could embarrass me, but Ken Jack couldn't embarrass me. And that answer you just gave embarrasses me, Ken Jack. So, because now fuck you.
I'm gonna go cliche and say Goss God. Actress, probably Zoe Deutsch. And she's in a movie with Tim Heidecker now. And that's the pinnacle of acting, is being in a movie with Tim Heidecker. I feel like we've answered this one before, but I like asking this a lot because you can always change your answer every time you get asked a different time. If you could only watch one movie for the rest of your life, what would it be?
What did I say? That one episode was like the most rewatchable movie like 2,000 times and then pick something else?
Well, you said Deadpool originally, and then you said Mad Max.
I think I said that. I said Deadpool is the most rewatchable mutant movie or comic book movie.
No,
even that wasn't true. It'd still be Guardians.
No, you said movie. Yeah, Guardians was in there too. Okay, so you picked Guardians.
Yeah.
Oh, I forget what I said in the original answer, but since then I went back and rewatched Empire Strikes Back, and I do think that's the perfect movie for a desert island type situation.
It's a good pick. I'm going Ocean's 11. I think I might have said that last time too. Ideal video game movie. If you could make one perfect video game movie, what would the video game be? Ken Jax's Halo. You know, actually, one of the Game of Thrones writers who's now going to do Star Wars, he penned that Halo movie that never got made in 2007. Fun little fact. Okay, so Ken Jax's Halo. Trill, what about you? Ideal video game movie.
So I played The Last of Us, and at first I thought that would be a good movie, but I don't think you could do a movie about that because it's like 15 hours and the story does a good job over 15 hours. You know what I want to see? And I think they are making this. I want to see an animated Mario Brothers movie.
They are making it.
Yeah. That's what I want to see.
Bob Hoskins.
Rest in peace, Bob Hoskins. I wouldn't mind a Halo movie if it was that Neil Blomkamp Halo movie. Cause I think District 9 was very Halo reminiscent.
That's a good point. Yeah. I'd have to go, this is cheating because it's Star Wars, but I do want to see Shadows of the Empire. I did love that game on N64. I'd love to see that adapted into a movie. But you know what? We've said this a bunch playing Fortnite, is that it reminds us of Hunger Games. It's very similar to Hunger Games. I'd love to see something along the lines of Fortnite and Hunger Games because I want to see the Hunger Games, but more games. Like, that was the problem with the last Hunger Games movies, the last two, is that there were no Hunger Games. So just make a Fortnite movie. Strike the iron while it's hot. Strike it while it's hot. Go now just, and make one.
It's like Jumanji where you like change into the avatar and it's like us and every other Avatar is a 13-year-old kid telling me I need to wear a diaper.
The best was we had a kid heckle us the other night. Oh, actually, that was the same kid, and that was before I logged off. When I logged off, he told Trill he needs a diaper. But before that, he – and keep in mind, it was like 9:30 Central Time, 10:30 Eastern Time, and the kid's like, you guys sound like you're 30. Shouldn't you guys be working? And I don't like heckling the people we play with. And I said, it's 10:30 at night, you fucking idiot. And he was definitely like 13, which is just – and we shouldn't be doing that, but he really triggered me there. I was very upset about that.
And he's like, well, yeah, you should be at McDonald's working. And we were like, well, do you have a problem with service industry workers?
Last two. Favorite movie you watched in school? So favorite movie that they made you watch in school?
A Beautiful Mind.
You got to watch that in school?
Damn. Well, I'm old. That's- yeah, one, I'm old. And two, it was like...
I watched fucking Dances with Wolves in school, dude. It was like me in like, what, 1920?
A Beautiful Mind is like somewhat education adjacent or something like that. I forget what class. I think it was like a creative writing class or something like that. It wasn't like a math class or something. Are you guys old enough to have like the TV cart rolled in? They still do that?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, yeah.
That okay, feeling
yeah.
of okay. that yeah. thrill, that thrill that's, when the cart get rolls in. Feels.
You walk into that classroom, that cart's on there, and it has the big belt around the TV so it doesn't fall off.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yes. Big fucking belt. Second to last one. This is the question we get more than anything. There's been like 3 or 4 Reddit posts on this. How did the Big Time Movie Boys create the podcast? People are just mystified by how the three of us know each other and how we created this podcast. And Ken Jack, you said before, it's not an interesting story, and it really isn't. It's not. But people want to know. And I'm pretty sure it started probably with the Smokin / T-Lizard tweet that I did on GMA, because that's when Ken Jack first followed me. Trill and I knew each other very, very lightly, just because of Twitter, just name. Hadn't really talked much. And then I think from there, it was a while after that. And then we talked about Star Wars and movies, and I had correspondence with Trill over something with podcast. And then slowly but surely we planned it. It was just going to be a Star Wars thing, and it blossomed to this. But it was just through that one tweet that Ken Jack followed me. That's really all I can remember.
It was the T-Lizard one, and I thought it was the funniest thing ever for all the people that didn't get it, and I helped spread it. And I'm pretty sure...
Yeah, I think Ken Jack followed me from his PMT days, and he was critical of my failed appearance on there. He set me up pretty badly.
Told me to pre-write
some jokes, have like a real awkward rapport with the fellas, like just bad advice. No, I followed Ken Jack a while, and then Jeff, I followed him back because he was verified initially, which I do for everyone who was verified. The friendship just grew.
That's it. That's really all there is. Yeah, we got flamed by a lot of people that day. Mashable.
It wasn't as fun as it sounded like it was.
Yeah, it wasn't fun for me for a very long time. Now it's funny, and you know, it's the whole reason I did it is because we had a really stupid question I had to tweet out about if the LeBron crying meme was the next MJ crying meme, which I knew we would get slandered by weird Twitter, which I was like, well, I don't want to do that, so I may as well throw some weird shit in there. And so I threw T-Lizard in there, and I threw in the best part of the tweet was the mask, was me putting smock in.
Yeah, because people are like, what the hell is that?
Completely overlooked. That's not a mask. Which is the second time we had tweeted the smock in something or other, because you had done it with that Mount Rushmore with the Tom Brady sketch artist with the mask parody. Yeah, the second time we did it. So I did it to get weird Twitter to not go after the GMA account and say, wow, you guys are so unhip. Yeah, I dragged you into that very unintentionally. That was very unfortunate. That was
No, you didn't drag me into anything. It was look, we grew and we're friends now, so it was worth it, you know. And that's really what Lights Camera Podcast is all about. The lights and the camera are the friends we meet along the way.
Last one. If you could improve one thing about movie theaters, what would it be?
I want to call an audible here. Can I sacrifice my improvement and give it to you so you can have two? I feel like you have way more issues deep-seated than I do.
My improvements? Cleanliness, for sure. I really think they just need to be cleaner. I there's too many times I go and there's gum in the middle of the seat. Fresh gum, too. Just needed to be cleaner. Other than that, I really don't have many complaints. Like I'm a big movie theater going experience supporter. I just think the cleanliness irks me a little bit. I'll say this about our older theaters and our dirty theaters, especially the one that we go to, Ken Jack. It has no stadium seating. We got another question about vintage theaters. Our theater is fairly vintage. And the screens are nice. The picture quality is pretty good. The IMAX is great. It's very updated. But we go to a non-stadium seating, very old theater that has just had updates kind of here and there. And they do need to update the theater. The theater is pretty rickety in some areas. But yeah, so to answer that one question we got about vintage theaters, I'm okay with them because I go to one. But Trill, I'll let you hammer out your improvement here before we wrap up the show.
Yeah, my improvement's never going to happen, but it's on my wish list. I wish there were two posted times for a movie. One time when they dim the lights for the trailers and the commercials, and the other time for when the actual movie is going to start, maybe one or two commercials. The reason they never do that is because obviously they want ad money to show the commercials before the movie. But the trailers aren't as important to me now because you could just see any trailer you want on the internet. It's ridiculous. I mean, especially for something like Coco with the short, it would be nice to know, okay, lights dim at 6:50, movie proper starts at 7:10. That way you can just roll in, especially since you can pre-purchase your seats now. You don't have to worry. That's a huge anxiety, by the way, that they've eliminated, is worrying about getting a good seat. You don't have to worry about that anymore. Roll right in, grab your seat. We'll never do that, but in a dream world, that's what I would change.
Yeah, that's my one thing, though. I think they kind of do need to add it, and I don't know about you because you go pretty early in the morning, but Ken Jack and I see it all the time. People think they can time the trailer's ending and they don't, and they show up 1 to 2 minutes late and they're being very disruptive. So I'd rather you just tell them right ahead, hey, if you don't want to see the trailer, show up at this time. You know, don't be an asshole though. Show up at this time or a little before. Don't show up 5 minutes after.
Isn't it funny though? Like whenever you're sitting at a movie theater and you see people walk in late and they do that thing where they stop and stand and do a scout in the dark theater for their seats. And in your mind, you're just like, that person's the biggest fucking asshole on the planet. Even though it's something that will happen to you at some point in your life and probably has already happened. It's like when someone fucks up in traffic, like we all do that. But you're just like, oh, my God, that person shouldn't be going to movies.
Lots of questions. A lot we didn't answer either. I'm going to save them all for the next time. We might even call out for questions next time. May just answer these and the ones from last time we still didn't get to. But thanks for sending them in. We always appreciate that. Like the interaction. Like I said, there's a lot more. A lot more we can answer. And we will eventually. We'll do these probably once a month. Like doing these. Creates a little different topic. And I like talking about food. Always fun talking about food. Actually, I will say one more that we didn't get to. Somebody did ask us if cereal is soup.
No. It's one of those hot dog sandwich arguments that I think you could argue for either side. But personally, I don't consider cereal a soup. Just because the cereal itself, by itself, if you eat it without any milk, it's not soup. In the same way, chopped up veggies are not considered soup, but then you add them to the broth and now they're just soup.
I think in order to be considered soup, it needs to be commonly served hot if it's going to be like liquid and solid combined. If I don't know, however you want to consider it, I think that has to be the general consensus.
So is it oatmeal soup?
Sure.
Fun pod. Lots of Super Bowl trailers. Cloverfield, Maze Runner.
Nah.
Just okay.
We got some big episodes coming up, Jeff.
Yeah, we're starting to kick into high gear. So I'll recap again, like we said earlier. Next week, 50 Shades Freed, we're going to review it with DJ Bean and Pete Blackburn.
I don't want to live forever.
For the week after that, Mr. Sunday Movies, James from the Weekly Planet. Go give them a listen. They gave us a little shout out again this week. Great podcast. He'll be on to review Black Panther. He already saw it. Liked it a lot. That's awesome. All I'll say there. I think his review's on YouTube, though, as well. So we'll review that, and we're going to do top five superhero movie villains. Top five superhero or comic book movie villains. You guys, of course, will vote on that. And then the week after that, the Oscars, our Oscar special with Adnan Virk from ESPN. Also, Adnan Virk from the Academy Awards, because he does work for them during the Oscars. So that's pretty prestigious right there. Yeah, he'll break it down. We'll give our predictions, who we want to win, who should win. And then we will do the Goscars award ceremony. Go vote now. bit.ly/2018Goscars. GOSCARS. Or just go in the description below on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play. We have the link in there.
Clown penis
thoughts,
fart.
Fellas. Closing thoughts here. Ken Jack and I are going to see 50 Shades on Thursday in IMAX, and Pete and DJ are seeing an IMAX too. They were only able to see an IMAX. We're not seeing an IMAX out of choice. It's just the only thing we can go see it in. Trill, when are you seeing 50 Shades? And is the wife going to come with you for this one?
The wife is going to come with me for this one. She normally doesn't like to go see the movies that we review for the podcast.
Me and Jeff are going to see this movie in IMAX 3D. Paid $30 a pop for it. I usually get that for free on certain websites. No free ads to see two people who aren't in love with each other fuck each other.
And you just play The Weeknd in the background while you watch.
I watch PMVs with just The Weeknd.
If you're going to see 50 Shades Freed, just take a picture of yourself going to see it.
Hey, this is Kevin. I'm doing a fan review for Lights Camera Podcast 50 Shades Freed. I'm a dry guy, Ken Jack. You hear the employee come up and they're like, sir, can you put your socks back on? I don't wanna live forever, 'cause I know I've been living in vain, and I don't wanna fit wherever. I just wanna keep calling your name until you come back. If I dodged a bullet or just